The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome to the Giants Insider Podcast on CSNBayArea.com. Sponsored by Max Muscle Sports Nutrition. Introducing your host, San Francisco Giants Insider, Alex Pavlovich.
All right, I'm here with Ray Ratto to wrap up the Giants season. I want to talk about something that's not the Giants actually first, because I'm sure you watched that game last night, the Dodgers Nationals thing. You pay attention to the national narratives, so to speak. What do you think of not just what Kershaw did, but do you think that'll end that, the postseason thing?
Until his next crappy start. Yeah. Because we never let a narrative die. We'll reinflate one if we have to, because we stink as people. But no, I don't think it's gonna change the narrative unless he changes the narrative with starts. I mean, the fact is, he got one out against one of the best hitters in baseball on what was his throw day. And while it was fascinating to see, and it was a phenomenally riveting 4-hour and 32-minute 9-inning game, I think the narrative will stay until he becomes a dominant starter in the postseason, which he hasn't been yet.
I was kind of happy for him, because I think everybody gets compared to Bumgarner, and there's only one guy who's doing that right now, and it's not really fair to everybody else to ask everybody to throw 8 innings in postseason games, because nobody's doing it except for one guy.
Well, but we're not interested in fair. We're interested in narratives, and narratives are usually preordained either by some television producer or by whoever's in charge of writing his own stories, but we cling to that more than we want to just let a game unfold. Another example. I mean, you know, people killed Bruce Bochy in Game 4 for literally doing exactly what both Dave Roberts and Dusty Baker did Thursday night. And that is, they changed the way they use their bullpens, you know, because it's the postseason and that's what you do now. But when you win, you're a genius, because that's what the narrative demands. And when you lose, you did something wrong, because that's what the narrative demands. And that's why I think we stink, because we need the narrative to be flexible enough that we can bend it for when it's false and then still make it out to be true.
But keep listening to this podcast, even though we stink. I should mention two things. One, as always, brought to you by Max Muscle. They've been good to us all year. Also, the second half of this podcast is George Contos, who is the first guy to come on twice and was good enough to spend a few minutes as he packed up talking about Game 4 and the Cubs. I thought his rant on the Cubs was maybe my favorite podcast moment of the year. But that was after the press conference. I want to ask you, you watched from here in studio. What did you not hear? Because I know you're good at that stuff. What did you not hear from Larry or Bobby or Brian that maybe tells you more than what we heard?
Well, what I did not hear but heard in a different form is, A, that they're not going to overpay for a power hitter who's ultimately going to disappoint them. I mean, getting rid of the two base coaches and talking about being more efficient first to third and second to home means that they're not going to get held hostage by, say, Ryan Braun and his agent, because I think they have come to the conclusion that power hitters don't want to be here. Okay, they just don't want to. Even at more money, they know their numbers are going to be depressed. And they now have sort of created a team that has no power hitter. I mean, Brandon Belt hit 17 and led the team. And he's clearly not a power hitter in a position that most people believe is a power position. Buster Posey's days as a long ball hitter, I think, are probably behind him. I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of wear and tear on that body. And I think he's going to still be, you know, either the best catcher in the game or one of them for the next 5 years. But their reluctance and his reluctance to become either a first baseman or a third baseman, I think, is going to hurt them in the long run. I don't think Hunter Pence is a long ball hitter anymore. I mean, at the numbers that you would require. So I think they decided they want to be not a station-to-station team. They want to be faster. They want to be, you know, more intrepid on the bases, and that's how they'll get the runs they would not get from home runs. The other thing I didn't hear that they basically said in another form was, while Bobby Evans said to call what's going to happen to the bullpen an overhaul is a gross exaggeration, no, it's not, because the question wasn't about what are you going to do with the bullpen. The question was really about what are you going to do with Romo and Casilla and Lopez. And I think Casilla is almost surely gone.
He can't come back.
Yeah.
Well,
Bruce Bochy, the way he failed to use him in the postseason made that clear.
But just numbers aside, I don't think emotionally they can handle that. So.
No, but I mean, I also think that Bochy's finally just run his course with him. I think the same is probably true of Romo, not because he is emotionally fragile, but because what he does, they want somebody younger and presumably cheaper to do. And Lopez, you know, because he's a one-hitter guy, he could come back, but it might be at a reduced cost. I think that's why getting the lockdown closer like Melanson is hugely important for them, because if you're getting rid of those three other guys, you're basically saying that our veteran presence is George Contos. And I don't think the veteran presence works if you're a sixth and seventh inning guy. I think you have to be a guy in a leverage situation. And that's why I think they're going to be willing to overpay for a closer.
I think that was the theme yesterday. I want to go back to one thing you said, which is a really good observation about the coaching changes and the fact that they do want to go first to third, first to home, second to home better, and be a more dynamic team. Bobby also said after the press conference that he loves what Eduardo Nunez brought on a day-to-day basis and mentioned his athleticism and his speed. So I think that plays into it. And also in the press conference, he made a point of saying their evaluation is that Jarrett Parker and Mac Williamson have more power than Adam Duvall, who hit 30 home runs in a small ballpark this year. So I think that tells you quite a bit, going back to your point about what they plan on doing in left field. I'm going to move on to the closer. You were around the team the last couple weeks. I know you talked to a lot of people, as I did. What do you think they're actually going to do there? Because there's three main guys, Chapman, Jansen, Melanson, and really different situations here. I guess we can start with Chapman. There's the stuff on the field. There's the stuff off the field. Do you think the off-field stuff matters?
As a baseball decision, I don't think they will let that matter. As a guy who's going to cost a lot of money, which means ownership gets to be involved, I think it will be. But I also am not convinced that Chapman would want to be here anyway. I think he can command a higher price somewhere else. In fact, the Cubs may just throw it all in on him, because if they win it all this year and he's a reason why they get past Washington and whoever wins the ALCS, that they'll back up the truck for him.
And if they don't win it all, they probably have to back up the truck.
Maybe.
Because then you have to win it all next year.
Yeah, but I mean, either way, I think Chapman is probably too rich for their blood. I think Andrew Miller, he's intriguing, but his value right now is as the guy who can pitch any situation. And unless they're going to reorder the way they operate their bullpen, and Bobby Evans believes that you have to have that lockdown ninth inning guy, that suggests to me that they're not thinking that way yet. In which case, I think it all boils back down to either Melanson or Jansen, and I think they like Melanson better, even though he's still got some miles on him. And I think they could commit a couple of years to Melanson and then hope either that Law or Strickland or somebody else can become a closer, which they clearly are not now. Beyond that, I don't know if there's anybody else that really piques their interest. I mean, they could have, you know, been really creative and tried to figure out a way to get Jeremy Jeffress if they liked him from Milwaukee before he went to Texas. But I think basically you've boiled down the three guys that are in play, and the one I think that appeals to them most, given how they want to define their bullpen, is Melanson.
There are guys that they liked at the deadline. Miller is a guy they loved at the deadline. New York wouldn't really even take their calls. Maybe Cleveland will be more likely to do so, depending on what happens. I don't know, but I agree with you. I think Melanson's the guy that is, and watching him, you could just kind of see, and really just a veteran guy who could come in and solve everything else. One thing I will say, too, I don't think I've written this yet, but Chapman and Johnny Cueto did not get along in Cincinnati, and I don't know if that plays into it at all. I don't know if Cueto is the type that you go to in the offseason, especially because he can opt out after next year, but that's just a small thing to keep in mind.
I think it's like the fourth reason why you don't go after Chapman.
It's on the list.
But it's on the list. And, you know, if it's something that's so substantive that Cueto says, well, then don't plan on me being here in 2018, then you probably back off and just go, you know what, there are other ways to go. Plus, I don't know that Chapman would want to come here anyway.
Was there anything else from the press conference from the last week that stood out to you in terms of setting up the offseason?
I think while they may not, they're not likely to go after a power hitter, I think they're done with Pagan. And I think Pagan's done with them. They may have to decide whether Gregor Blanco is worth keeping around, only because they can't find a place for him to play. And if they love Nunez as much as they do and they still want Gillespie around, maybe Nunez becomes an outfielder. But the other thing is they have to figure out who Jeff Samardzija is, because right now he's their fourth starter. And depending on what they want to do with Ty Block, I mean, if Block knocks their eyes out, I don't think the battle is between Block and Matt Cain to see who the fifth starter is. I think the battle is between Block and Samardzija to see who the fourth starter is, because I think Matt Moore's passed him now.
Yeah.
I think it's Bumgarner, Cueto, and Moore. And Samardzija is a big ticket item to be a fifth starter. And that's one of those things where when I see them doing these end-of-year pressers and Larry Bear is one of the four people there, that's a sign that he has a hand in all of this, because he's the one who controls the money. It's not his money, but he controls it. And if you have Matt Cain's number as a non-rotational guy, and maybe a guy who with a contract used to have to eat if they can't figure out what to do with him, and Samardzija, who might end up being a fifth starter because he's been passed, all of a sudden now you're talking $40 million. And that's money that, while they can afford it, it's money they notice. So I think that's going to be fascinating. They have to figure out a way either to generate more runs or become like the Mets without the power hitting, which is to overwhelm you with pitching and just say, we'll score enough runs, we'll get to 93 wins. And I'm not even sure why the question about getting into the low 90s in wins was such a big deal. I mean, if you're in the wild card, you're in. I mean, because, you know, the wild card has proved to be a pretty decent path to drive if you have enough pitching. So I don't know that they're as fascinated by that as other people are, because you don't have to be the Cubs to win it all. You know, you don't have to have the best record. In fact, most of the time, the team with the best record doesn't win the World Series. So in that way, I think their priorities are closer one, and then sort of a tie between outfielder and determining who the fourth starter is. And the outfielder, I mean, I'm not as high on Parker and Williamson, and I don't buy the he's got more power than Duvall, because we're never going to know that unless you put them both in Cincinnati.
Duvall did hit 30 homers in the minors, too, so okay, well, not
what,
a guy
what,
who,
well,
yeah.
What, not in evidence here.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's because he's not, it's, this is not a place for that's conducive for him, or if it's just not a place that's conducive. And the only place that these guys can play half their games is here. So we're never going to know if either one of those guys is as powerful as Duvall. And if they don't have other parts to their game that can make them, you know, useful, you know, on an everyday basis, then, you know, who's that second line outfielder that they can get? I mean, meaning not a Ryan Braun type. I mean, a solid outfield. I mean, where does that come from? And I think ultimately we might find out when all this shakes out is that, A, Bobby Evans is going to have to be a whole lot bolder than he was at the trade deadline. And, two, that he might just double down on pitching and become the team. Well, we've got the best rotation, and now we've got a closer to go with all these other young arms we like, and we're going to score three runs, and you're going to score two.
That would be my guess, and I think Brian said one more interesting thing yesterday, which when he was asked about either power or left field or something, he said the magic number is four, and you have to get to four, and it doesn't matter how you get there. And in this ballpark, yeah, it doesn't matter if it's doubles, triples, home runs. It doesn't matter. The magic number is four runs. And I think he's always felt that way. And part of the issue this year in the second half was a lot of times they didn't get to four. And when they got there, they couldn't hold the lead.
Exactly. Well, and you know, but the other thing is, and I think this has been the great untold story, is that I think everybody operates on the theory that this is now fully Bobby Evans' shop. And it might be in a lot of ways, but I wonder if at some point he's going to say, I've got to sort of divest myself of Brian and walk completely on my own. Because that gets to be sort of an ego thing, and I don't know how you never know how egos work in sports until they manifest themselves. But I just can't imagine that Brian Cashman would not have taken Brian Sabian's calls, even if there was just you don't have what we need, you know. I mean, because I think Brian Sabian has a level of throw weight in baseball that Bobby Evans doesn't have yet, because Brian has skins on the wall and Bobby doesn't. And I think there comes a point where, and it's not like an ego thing, but it's a I have to be the general manager where everybody returns my calls. And I thought it was incredibly telling that the Yankees could dismiss phone calls from a team with the Giants pedigree in the game. And I just wonder if at some point either Brian has to start becoming the guy who works the phone harder, or Bobby says, I got to make this my operation. And that's one of those internal politics things that you won't see, and they won't put a press release out on. But the fact that the Yankees wouldn't even talk to them about Miller or Chapman, that, I don't know, that's a weird signal to me.
Yeah, I don't know what the true, like, I guess we'd heard that they basically said you don't have enough. And I don't know what level it got to of whether it was not returning texts or phone calls. It basically just was, there's nothing to talk about here, I think. Okay, but it is a similar thing.
I think you would always take the call on the off chance that the other team is so desperate that they'll overpay to get your guy. And if if they could dismiss a call from the Giants, it suggests to me that either Bobby is not yet creative enough to engage people's interest after the initial resistance on a phone call, or they don't think that Bobby has enough throwaway to make them listen yet. And maybe that's part of the maturation process that general managers go through. Brian Cashman can't know, if he doesn't take the call, whether Bobby Evans says, look, we'll give you Pence. That's a ludicrous example.
Yeah.
But you don't know what the guy's going to say until he says it to you. And that's the fascinating thing to me, is that, this is a big transition year for Bobby Evans, too. Because the perception right now, I think within baseball, is that the Giants are still dangerous, but they're more flawed than they have been. And it's not just because they, peed away a 3-run lead in the ninth inning of a playoff game. It's their body of work right now is 3 months of awful baseball, where the problem is right in front of them. They didn't do enough about it, when there was time to do it. And the other thing they're a team that, frankly, is getting older in their core spots. Buster Posey he's still more than merely serviceable, but, that much wear and tear, to me, makes him susceptible to a lot more injury. And I think at some point they're going to have to figure out a way to convince him, look, you're going to have to play first base more often, or play third base more often, or sit more. We can't have you just completely collapse in 2 years because your body has just taken a pounding for that long.
Caught more games this year than any other year.
Yeah.
Which is not what you expect this late in his career.
And because he's stubborn, that's going to be a tough sell. But, I think there is a point where if your catcher is as important to you as Posey is to them, it behooves you to do everything you can to lengthen his productive career. And I think, catching him in more games is counterproductive to that.
Probably a different way to go about it next year. I think we will see something. Just looking at it, I think he had about a third as many games at first base this year as he did the year before, which a lot of it was because of Belt and not benching Belt. But again, when you look at Buster, 3 home runs in his last 63 games or something like that, that's worth examining.
But he's not as quick on the bases as he used to be, for obvious reasons. And if they want to be more first to third, second to home, I think you want to preserve what legs he still has left. The other question, and to me it's the most fascinating position question of all, because it ties into all the others, is what do you ultimately do with Brandon Belt? It's harder to move him now than ever because of his contract, but 17 homers is not enough. And him not being the leading RBI guy, if he's the leading home run guy, I don't know how you... he needs to be one of those guys that you're willing to listen to trade offers for. Not because he's some sort of a failure, but because he forces you to catch Posey more often, which I think is counterproductive. And he doesn't give you enough offensively on the other end to make him untouchable. And so, to me, what they do about him, what they think about him, that's a real tipping point for them. They may decide they just love him, which is fine, But when you love him, you get the long streaks where he can't hit, and he's the worst body language ever. And you're not going to get a ton of home runs from him. And he's not going to generate runs, the way you'd want your first baseman to. And he makes you catch Posey more. There's there's a lot of reasons to rethink the belt phenomenon.
And I don't remember the exact quote, but Brian said something in the last couple of weeks of the season about not being a run producer and not – that's so important to them. It's an old-school way of thinking. Belt the last week when he was hitting second, in a weird way, was like a perfect fit because this guy was going to get on base more than anybody on the team. But you're right. It is a conversation going forward. Do you want your first baseman to be that guy? Is that the situation they want?
And well, because it dovetails with the what do you do with Posey when you want to play him but you don't want to catch him? Because first base is his logical play. It's not third anymore, I don't think.
Yeah.
I think that window's closed. So if you're going to play Posey more at first, that means Belt sits more. And, you know, is that going to make him happy? You know. Plus, you know, Belt's at the time in his career when he could probably fetch the most in trade, even with this contract size. So, no, I think, you know, they've got hard choices to make, and I think the hard choices are not what do we do about the closer. You go out and you get one. You know, you overpay to get Melanson if you have to, but you do that. But it's what do you do with Belt? What do you do with Samardzija? To a lesser extent, what do you do with Kane? Because the only thing about Kane that makes him sort of vital in their thinking is the fact that he makes a ton of money. Now, they've eaten money before. And, you know, they're loathe to get rid of guys that they, you know, that have served the franchise well. But I think Bobby's a little different that way than Brian is, in that I think Bobby's more willing to do that part. But he's not yet, I think, the really sort of creative thinker in terms of you know, trades and free agency that Sabian was. So to me, those are the most interesting positions. You know, you're getting another left fielder because the Pagan thing is done. That solves itself. Third base, you know, I suppose they could live with Gillespie, even though he's not good defensively. Nunez, they're going to have to find a place for him, whether it's third base or left field. That'll solve itself. But Samardzija and Belt, I think, are the decisions that will be the most difficult for them to make because there's arguments both ways.
Well, more Belt Wars for Twitter and talk radio and for us. And maybe we'll do this again.
Why would you want that?
I will let this go now. Thank you, Ray, for joining me and recapping, I guess, what we watched. A weird final stretch there of the worst baseball I've ever seen, and then they turned it on at the right time, and then they ran into a buzzsaw, and they were three outs away from sending that buzzsaw back to Chicago, and I honestly think they were going to win Game 5.
I think the Cubs thought they were going to win Game 5. I thought that's what makes Game 4 the most maddening postseason moment ever, even more than Game 6 of the 2002 World Series, because it was all there for them.
Cueto, Baumgartner.
In Chicago, where it would be squeaky bum time for 10 million people. I mean, Chicago would have been a Tupperware. They had it all there for them, and in the most spectacular way possible, even more than the way the Nationals Dodgers game got weird. That was still the weirdest game of the postseason because it's right there. Here it is. You get Game 5 with your best guy going in a town that is ready to strangle itself. You couldn't do it.
With the possibility now that we know, bringing this back full circle, that if you get through that game without Baumgartner, you're throwing him at a Dodgers team that threw everything at the Nationals to advance. So all of a sudden, it looks really good if you can get three outs. But they couldn't, and here we are.
No, in fact, the great thing about it was their meltdown took less time than the meltdown in Washington last night.
Well, that whole game took less time than the seventh inning.
They shot themselves in the face in 24 minutes. And that's the last thing, and then I'll let you go because you have things to do.
I have nothing to do. It's the off season. But anyway,
well, then let's talk another hour and a half. You know,
go for it. Last thing.
I think there's going to be a hangover from that game. I think there's going to be an organizational hangover from that. And it's not going to be a matter of just putting your head down and working harder. That's one that's going to stick with them for a while. It's a signature failure because it goes back to everything else. You know, it's, you know, you get your five runs early and then you can't get anything else pushed back. Because don't forget, they're hitting died after they scored in that game. It literally was the entire second half of the season boiled down into like a snow peas size metaphor. I mean, just there it is. There's your whole season. Live with it. And I think that's one that when they think about that, players, coaches, manager, front office, that one's going to stab them in the eye every time they think about it.
I think those guys are going to have a very rough October and November because they're going to be watching a Dodgers team that just threw everything, like we said. Mm-hmm. And that's a very beatable team. And then once you get to the World Series, we've seen it. You never know. Pitching can override everything. Yeah. So no, they're going to have to live with that for a long time.
And I think it is our job to remind them in January, February, and March that, no, you guys pissed this away.
All right. At FanFest, I'll do it to everybody.
Absolutely. Are you still a failure?
Yes.
Yeah. That should be your opening question for everybody. You know, where do you get the wherewithal to just show your face here anymore? How could you have shamed this city the way you did? Go there.
I'll use that.
Yeah.
I'll see George Contos at FanFest. He talked to me yesterday. Thank you, Ray, for joining me. Here is George Contos, the first two-time guest on the Giants Insider Podcast. George Contos, you are now the first two-time guest on my podcast. You did it in spring training. This will be much shorter, but we're 2 days removed from losing. But yesterday, I guess, and this morning when you wake up, what is the feeling about what happened? And also, I think I'm pretty confident about what would happen in Game 5, but when you guys look forward to potentially having Cueto and Bumgarner thrown at him.
Yeah, you know, it's. I woke up yesterday morning, and it really felt like it was kind of a dream. You know, it was definitely a punch in the gut type feeling. I felt like we had that game, and we were going to Chicago with a lot of momentum. I think they were starting to get on their heels and backed off a little bit, starting to panic. So I think if we were to be playing tonight in Chicago, I think it really would have been a fun game that hopefully would have ended in our favor. You know, unfortunately, we didn't get to do that. We couldn't seal the deal, and they're a great team, and they did what they were supposed to. They put the ball in play, and they were able to eke it out on us. But you know, I think if we were able to get past that game, Game 5 would have been a lot of fun, and the rest of the playoffs would have been a lot of fun as well.
For the guys in the bullpen, for it to end that way, I think, you know, there was a lot of talk about it all year long, but in September it did seem like you guys the last couple of weeks maybe found a mix that was working and something that could work in the postseason. For it to end that way, was it a little bittersweet just because it did seem like you guys had found a groove?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Especially when you know, the bullpen the second half of the season was it seemed like under fire all the time. We play a lot of one-run games, and, you know, everyone gives up runs. It doesn't matter what bullpen you are or what pitcher you are. You're going to give up runs here and there, and I think the fact that we played so many one-run games, we were scrutinized for blowing a few saves, but you know, it happens to everybody, and we still ended up in a good position to do good things in the playoffs, and we just weren't able to you know, finish the deal when it mattered in Game 4. But we came a long way when a lot of people thought we were out of it.
We just talked to Bobby, and he said he's going to tender you a contract. He'll bring you back for another year with the Giants. When you look at the bullpen next year, obviously some big guys will be gone, but also some young guys had big roles this year, and you're going to be kind of, I think, probably a little bit of a leader for those guys. How do you think going forward with Derek and Hunter and Josh and Steven and everybody who's involved, how do you think it'll work out next year?
You know, it's first and foremost, we're going to miss the three guys that are, you know, if none of them come back, Javier and Casilla and Romo, they're guys who have been staples for 7 years in this bullpen. You know, it was weird not having Jeremy here this year as part of the core four, but losing all three of those guys, if none of them come back, is going to be kind of a shock when we report to spring training and they're not there. But you know, it's gonna be one of those things where we have some guys who are eager, who are hungry. They fit right into the mold of a bullpen, a Giants bullpen member. You know, they're eager to do whatever they can to win. You know, Strick, Law, Corey, Osich, they're all guys who are very hungry. They're competitors. they're selfless. They will pitch in any role, and I think that they've shown that they're diverse enough to come in and do whatever they're asked of them, which is one of the main characteristics of being in the Giants bullpen. So I think it's going to be a little bit weird. I think we're going to have to kind of establish a little bit of a new identity with those guys not there. But at the same time, I think we've got a lot of guys who are going to step up and do their jobs, and hopefully we can pick up right where we left off.
You were just telling us about Javi and how you've had a chance to – they've asked you to move lockers at times, and you said, no, I'm sticking next to that guy. Is that the toughest part of a season ending like this, just when you look around the room and see six free agents, and especially in the bullpen, three guys who have been here since you got here?
Absolutely. I think the toughest part of this game, you know, losing stings, and it's going to sting for a while, but eventually that bandage will heal itself, and we'll report to spring training, and it'll just go on. But the friendships that, I mean, we're like a family. I see these guys more than I see, you know, my parents or my brother and sister or, you know, anybody who I'm close to. So, that's one of the hardest things. We experienced it with Huddy last year, who was retiring, and there was quite a bit of emotions expressed last year with him, and now these guys. I first got called up. My locker was in between Jeremy and Javi, and I've been asked if I wanted to move several times, and I never wanted to move because you establish friendships and you get close and you start meeting people's family, and 25 years of baseball experiences between the two of those guys. So that's the toughest part, is just, you're not losing a teammate, you're losing a friend and somebody who's very, very close to you. So it's going to be difficult. It's going to be very weird coming into spring training and not seeing Javier Lopez or Sergio Romo in his locker that he was, or Casilla where he was. But it's part of the game, and it's part of life. And those are guys who I will have, I think, lifelong friendships with, and we will always be in touch, and we will always be close. So not seeing them every day is going to not be easy. That's just, part of the game.
You're going back to Chicago. I think I know how you feel about Chicago, but is it going to be tough spending time there?
Yeah, it's gonna, until the season's over, it's gonna be very or until they're eliminated, which I never thought I'd be saying this in a million years. I grew up a Cubs fan since I was drafted by the Yankees, and then I was a Yankee fan, and now I'm a Giants fan, and I never thought I'd be saying this, but I hope that they lose every single game now, just because it's a tough pill to swallow. The way that we went out, the way that it happened. I'm a competitor, and I want to win. I'm used to winning with this organization, and the fact that a loss came at the hands of the Chicago Cubs is a tough one. So like I told you earlier, I'm rooting for the Cleveland Indians now. Jason Kipnis is a buddy of mine, so I hope they do it. They're kind of Switzerland for me.
Yeah.
They're a great team, the Cubs, and they have the potential to do some special things, but again, it's October and anything can happen. The best team on paper doesn't always win, as we've seen in 10, 12, and 14. So, they're a great team, and good luck to them. And hopefully, I don't have to see too much of it when I go back home.
I'll get you out on this. The other night, you threw 75, 80 pitches down the bullpen, and obviously a heavy workload for you all year. What do you do when you go home? How long do you take off before you? I know you're a guy who always works in the off season to make sure you're ready for those spots, but haven't been through this where it's mid-October and
right,
you're going
home. Right, I think the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to sit on the couch for about 2 weeks and just let everything kind of settle, let the body heal itself a little bit. Last year I went 74 appearances in 73 innings, so the workload was a little bit more last year. I look forward to doing some golf, and then I'll probably take about a month off. I won't really do any working out related activities. I may go for a run or do some yoga or something physical, but as far as the training regimen that I do, it'll probably start first couple weeks of November, and then it'll be full steam ahead again. Looking forward to 2017.
Well, we know you're going to be back, and I think, what was it, 2.5? Something this
year? Yeah, 2.53
or something like that. So, no-brainer that you'll be back. I appreciate you coming on a couple times.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me.
Enjoy the offseason.
I'm glad I don't have to sweat to know that I'm getting tendered a contract.
we'll be in touch when they officially make it official.
Absolutely. Thanks
George.
It is out of here in the center field, and this game is over. Got him. The Giants are world champions.
The Giants Insider Podcast on CSNBayArea.com.
let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.